From health and wellness to education,
we need to be thinking about what it takes for students to succeed.
From art and politics to social issues of the day,
we have young Black males who are thriving in their communities and who are being shown as leaders.
The journey is what matters.
I would say to all of us, we can be better than we are.
Let's join Dr. Wayne A.I. Frederick, president of Howard University, and his guests as they take steps on the journey.
Today, joining me on the journey is Dr. Freeman Wibowski. Dr. Freeman Wibowski is the current president at University of Maryland, Baltimore County. In 2009, Time magazine named him one of the 10 best college presidents. And based on my personal interaction, I think they probably should do another one in 2014 and just name it the number one best college president, such as my affinity for Dr. Wibowski. His reputation for steering African-American students towards science and engineering fields in which they have been traditionally underrepresented has been phenomenal. He was named one of America's best leaders by U.S. News & World Report in 2008, has served in the role as UMBC's president since 1992, has also authored numerous articles and co-authored two books, Beating the Odds and Overcoming the Odds, focusing on parenting and high-achieving African-American males and females in science. Dr. Wibowski, welcome.
Thank you very much.
Let's start with your books, Beating the Odds and Overcoming the Odds. When we look at STEM education, where African-American students are underrepresented, What are some of the pearls that you try to give us in your book?
Sure. I think people are always surprised to hear me say that no skill is more important to success in STEM, in science or engineering, than reading and thinking skills. I think for students in general, when talking about educating people to go into the sciences or to become educated in general, young people, children need to learn to read and think well. And so the book talks about how parents and grandparents, whether they were educated or not, focused on books in the home. So I would say reading and thinking skills, giving them a chance to meet people who were educated, having the experience of thinking and talking about ideas, learning how to use math in cooking and in with money, fractions and decimals, thinking about coins, quarters and dimes and nickels, connecting the math to real life, all those things. And then dreaming about the possibilities of being a doctor, of being an engineer, of being a scientist. All those things were very important.
Now, on a college and university campus, as we invest in our STEM areas, what do you see the role for humanities and so on in terms of giving an overall breadth of education to college students?
You know, I think it's so important that you said that, because often when we talk about STEM, we tend to think we're not considering the important role of the arts and the humanities and social sciences. I think in the 21st century, first of all, that the arts and the humanities and the social sciences are more important than ever. And any person who is becoming educated needs to be well-grounded in those disciplines, because it's in those disciplines that we understand more about our history, about who we are as human beings, about the context of our lives, about how we connect to other people, about our culture. Now, the fact is that students who are going to be prepared in medicine, for example, need to know a lot about ethical behavior, or people in engineering, the same thing. And so whether one is becoming an English teacher or an engineer, one needs to be grounded in the humanities. And I think a well-prepared student, a well-educated student in STEM or in social sciences will get that broad liberal arts education.
You know, with that in mind, as we look upon our history and where we are, I know that you were jailed for almost a year as a 12-year-old in the fight for civil rights in the early 1960s in Alabama. What stimulated your interest, despite those odds, in math and science?
Sure. You frightened me. It was for a week, not a year, though. Let me just say. And it was a terrible week during the 1963 March. And the fact is that I was fascinated by the notion that children could make a difference in their own lives. And even as a fairly uncourageous kid who just loved math, I was inspired by the words of Dr. King, and my parents allowed me to march, and I did spend that week in jail. And what the experience taught me was that we can empower children to take ownership of their education and to believe that their actions can have an impact on their future.
What did your parents do?
My parents were educators. My mother taught English and later math and English, and my father had been an educator and then later became a steel worker because he could make more money, quite frankly, working in steel mill. But he actually taught the men in a steel factory and prepared them to go and get GEDs. So they were both very passionate about education.
All right. The percentage of African Americans earning STEM degrees has fallen during the last decade. And obviously, several factors are cited for that. On your campus, you have a phenomenal success rate in getting students to matriculate through that process. What do you think are some of the key factors in terms of the environment you've created there?
Sure. First of all, I mean, ours is a campus that has students from 150 countries, and we are doing well with those students. Whether they are from Jamaica or Trinidad or from Russia or from China or from Baltimore. Now, what's the difference? First of all, I'm interested in knowing on a campus that people are concerned about the broad education of students across disciplines, number one, that we are looking at the interaction between faculty and staff and students, that we care deeply about those students. I am always thinking about the rich education I received at Hampton. And what I remember about the Hampton experience was that faculty really cared about students. And that really gave me a philosophy of education that is consistent with what my colleagues at UMBC believe. And that is that we need to be thinking about what it takes for students to succeed. Now, I had the privilege of chairing the National Academy's Committee on Underrepresentation in Science. It doesn't surprise people that only 20% of blacks and Hispanics who begin with a major in science actually graduate with a bachelor's in science. Does surprise people that only 32% of whites and 40% of Asian Americans will graduate with a degree in science, even after many more want it. Now, why is that? It's not just a K-12 problem, though we need to do more with K-12. The problem is, the challenge is, we need to change the culture of teaching science. We tend to think that most people who begin in science won't make it, shouldn't make it, and they don't. It's a self-fulfilling prophecy. The difference on our campus is if we admit students, whether they are African-American, Hispanic, white, or Asian, or whatever, we then feel it's our responsibility to figure out ways to help them succeed. And we do that using course redesign, using the strategies of our famous Meyerhoff program, building community among the students, focusing on collaboration, getting away from setting a curve and rather focusing on those competencies that are most important and setting very high expectations for ourselves and for our students.
You're listening to The Journey. My guest today is Dr. Freeman Wrubowski, president of the University of Maryland, Baltimore County. I'm Dr. Wayne Frederick. You know, you're a product of an HBCU.
Yes.
There's a lot of discussion at HBCUs about STEM education.
Yes.
And if we look at the history of these institutions, the A&M came out at a point. A lot of people try to use the same analogy with STEM today. And I wonder what your take is on. Is this another version of the agriculture and that type of push?
You know, I would say this. As you know, UMBC is a predominantly white campus. We like saying we are, by the way, historically diverse. Because we were founded in the 60s, we had students of all types. We're about 14, 15% black, but we probably have 2,000 blacks out of the 14,000 plus students. Now, here's my point. Clearly, the Hampton experience prepared me well, and I've had a chance to look at the education on many HBCU campuses and some of the most productive institutions in our country in preparing black scientists are just those, the HBCUs, whether it's Howard or Hampton, Morehouse, Spelman, Xavier, Morgan State, Tuskegee, Fisk, a number of them have historically done it and continue to do it. And it's that caring environment that makes a difference. And I would say to all of us, we can be better than we are. All of us can be better than we are, and we need to look and see what proportion of our students are succeeding. I would say in all of our cases, we can help many more students to succeed. But I think the American public and African Americans, as we talk about that group, should understand more about why it's important to have more students in STEM, just as we need to have more students in the other disciplines. And that means we need more physicians. We need more people who are focused on healthcare issues. Under 1% of the tenure track and tenured scientists at the National Institutes of Health are black. Under 1%, with all the health disparities that we faced. If you look at most of the national agencies in our country, you're talking about 1% at most of the scientists, whether they're talking about issues in energy, whether they're talking about intelligence and defense. And so we have an issue, a challenge in our country that we are not represented. Hispanics and blacks are not represented. And we know that by 2040, about half of Americans will be of color. And so for reasons of competitiveness in our country, for reasons of wanting these groups to be represented, at the table, we must prepare more of our children to succeed in these disciplines, just as we need more kids who are prepared to be artists and people in the humanities and social sciences.
Right. Now, you mentioned the role that faculty-student interaction plays and how critical you think that is. What do you look for with your faculty, mm-hmm. and how do you view their role and empower them to be able to fulfill that role?
You know, we are strong believers in shared governance on our campus, and faculty have decided that they want to be a part of initiatives designed to strengthen substantially our efforts to help students succeed. That it is not acceptable, we say, to see the majority of students who begin with a chemistry major changing because they didn't do well. Unfortunately, in America, we tend to think that if most students don't succeed in a course, it means that the course was of high quality. We tend to define quality on the basis of who is excluded, rather than defining quality as a combination of rigor and support. And that's the significance of the UMBC story. That's why we're getting such national visibility, because we are a research campus that cares deeply enough about undergraduates of all races to say it is our job to give them the support, our students the support, to ensure that their dreams are fulfilled.
You know, on Friday night, I had the opportunity to sit and have dinner with a few people. And so happened at my table was a female mathematician. Mm. Who is an administrator at a public school system, mm-hmm. and a female ambassador, mm-hmm. of a South American country. Mm-hmm. And they started up a discussion about women in math, mm-hmm. and science. Mm-hmm. And it was a very interesting dialogue. They were speaking about that disparity, about the underrepresentation, and what were some of the solutions. Yes. What are your opinions about women in STEM?
Sure. We are making progress in the life sciences. The place where we have the greatest problem would be with women in computer science. We have had a 50% decline in the percentage of women across races in computer science. We've gone from about 36% of computer science majors to 18% over the past 30 years. And so we have developed a center for women in IT. So they're called CWIT scholars. And what's significant is that we are and these are young women of all races, and the goal is to increase the number of women majoring in both computer science and engineering. We have our first woman, a dean of engineering. We're very pleased with that. We also have women of color, including black women in those disciplines. One of my MAHF scholars, one of the black women graduating in computer science in the last couple of years, became the first black woman to get a PhD in computer science, for example, from the University of Michigan. She's now on the faculty at Clemson, going down to the faculty at University of Florida. So we are producing these people. What's sad is we're still talking about the first, though, in certain areas, you see. So we have a long way to go, but I think the key is to build community among students and to have them supporting each other in science and engineering cultures around the country in all kinds of institutions. We tend to push cutthroat approaches. We push competition rather than collaboration.
As we wrap up, if you could choose one message, obviously your messages are broad.
Sure.
What would that message be to that parent who's listening?
Yes.
That 10-year-old African-American male child that they have, that they envision becoming that scientist?
You know, it's the message for a young black male. It's the message for a young black female. It's the message that my colleagues and I are using with this commission that I'm a part of for the president on educational excellence for African Americans. And it would be, and I know David Johns, who's over the White House Initiative, would agree, that we give our children, black boys and girls, a sense of self, that we teach them to believe in themselves, to believe that they can do anything with hard work, that they have the worth and the value, that they simply need to dream about the possibilities, to ask for help, and to give it all they have.
Excellent. Today, my guest has been Dr. Freeman Wibowski. I thank you very much. I'm Dr. Wayne Frederick, and thanks for joining us on The Journey.
You've been listening to The Journey with Dr. Wayne A.I. Frederick, right here on the Howard University Radio Network.